Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Dominic Bachaco and investigative sports reporter Caitlin Schmidt. This is a very unique episode because we're solely focusing on the Craig Carter trial. Carter was convicted and is facing 15 to 23 years in prison for assault of a former student athlete. Caitlin, is it weird that it's been – we were talking about this before the podcast. It seems like the big number here is three because it's almost 3 years to when the investigation first started, and then three years in the making, and then 3 days of trial and 3 hours of deliberation. Caitlin, you were out there covering the trial, gavel to gavel. Can you just tell us what was the journey like, and can you just give us all the details?
It was interesting. It certainly went by fast. I didn't expect it to wrap up in 3 days, including verdict. But the first day of the trial was opening arguments, and Bailey Gibson testified. Second day of the trial, we had the UAPD detective who took Craig Carter's confession, as well as Bailey Gibson's roommate, Julie Labonte. And then Friday brought us closing arguments and a couple hours of deliberation and the verdict. But it was... the assault itself really never seemed to be in dispute between the prosecution and state. Carter's attorneys never denied once that it happened. I guess that's hard to do when you have a taped confession from your client. But they stuck to arguing that it didn't meet the statutory guidelines for the aggravated factor. And they spent most of the time, I think, attacking Bailey Gibson's credibility, which it doesn't look like worked out for them in the end.
Yeah. And the weapon that was included in here is a box cutter. A box cutter that he threatened her to cut her with. How was the box cutter kind of talked about during the whole trial?
I mean, Carter's attorneys made sure to mention that it was old and dull. But this was a guy that said that he always had a box cutter in his pocket for fixing equipment, since he needed to do that, I guess, on a daily basis. But he admitted to throwing it out the window of his car while he was driving down the freeway after the attack because he knew he screwed up. So the jury didn't get to see the box cutter. They heard a lot about it. The prosecution made sure to call it a razor blade every chance they got. But
just sitting on the side of the road somewhere in Tucson then, huh?
Yeah.
Just laying there.
Caitlin, I want to talk about some of the key figures in the case who testified over the last week. Julie Labonte, was it her roommate?
It was her roommate.
So Gibson's roommate. What did she have to say about the whole thing? Because that was one of the key witnesses, I feel like, obviously, in the whole thing.
Yeah, that kind of turned the trial a little bit, it seemed. There were some issues. The defense kept bringing up the fact that when Bailey Gibson spoke to police... on May 1st, 2015, she never mentioned that her relationship with Craig Carter actually started with what was essentially a sexual assault. She was passed out drunk in Oregon during Olympic trials and woke up the next day and learned about what had happened. The first time she mentioned that, according to Carter's attorneys, were when she spoke to ESPN in 2020, a couple of years later. But when Julie Labonte took the stand, she said that the morning of April 20th, 2015, before Bailey went into Craig Carter's office, Bailey broke down in tears and told her everything, including the sexual assault. Wow. So that kind of threw a wrench in the defense, I think.
So Dan Cooper, Craig Carter's attorney, one of them, it was interesting reading your first article about this on Wednesday when he brought up Bill Clinton in the assault trial.
Yeah.
It seemed kind of an interesting figure to bring up to try to make a case for Craig Carter. But tell me about kind of what his point was the entire time. What were they trying to... argue for Craig Carter.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting too. I think they thought they had Bailey Gibson in a bind there when they questioned her on the stand. UAPD had asked her where she was first intimate with Craig Carter, and she said the McHale Center. So I think they thought they had caught her in a lie there. And when Dan Cooper asked her about it, she said, "Well, intimacy to me doesn't just mean sex. It can mean everything, flirting, touching, etc." And he referenced, "Sounds like we have a Bill Clinton situation here." And she said, "Jeez. I honestly don't know what you're talking about." Everyone else in the courtroom probably did, but I guess she's a little young for that.
So a reference went over her head.
That's, yeah.
That was the end of that.
Yeah.
But I mean, emotionally, you've covered several cases. How did emotions inside the courtroom kind of differ from other cases that you've covered?
There was quite a contentious relationship between the attorneys, prosecution and state. There was a lot of arguing, a lot of objections. So there was that level of tension. But then we also had Bailey Gibson and her whole family sitting in the same row of the courtroom as Craig Carter's wife and his son.
Wow.
Which was a little awkward. It was kind of surreal. Emotions were running really high at the end of the trial when we had a verdict. I think that was the first time I saw Bailey smile in 3 days, and Craig Carter promptly turned around and pointed at her and said something, and Bailey and her mother were in tears. So the judge saw all of that, so that could very well be taken into consideration in his sentencing here in a couple of weeks.
Not to backtrack, but the question of intimacy and the definition of it, was that kind of a theme throughout the trial, or was that just something that was brought up Wednesday and into the bud pretty quick?
I mean, it was a theme throughout the trial, and it had absolutely nothing to do with the situation that he was facing charges on, honestly. The only thing that mattered about their relationship for the statute was that they had had a sexual relationship at one point, which was clearly established. It was irrelevant how it started, when it started, what the nature of it was. And as the prosecution said in their closing arguments, the defense had been using it strictly as a distraction, which it didn't work, but I think it had a fair chance of working. The jury was allowed to submit questions after witnesses, and they had some questions for Julie Labonte about the relationship. So it seemed at a certain point that people were getting hung up on it, but they moved past that.
Right. So 15 to 23 years, it's for two counts of aggravated assault, one of them with a deadly weapon. Correct me if I'm wrong there. Is that kind of time range something we'd expect for charges of that nature, or was it a little bit on the low side, high side?
You know, it's tough to say. It's the statutory guidelines. Strangulation is a different and very serious aspect of domestic violence, so it carries a little more time than a standard assault would. The dangerous instrument one actually had a year longer. But it'll be curious to see. The judge can sentence him concurrently if she wants to. He could do less time, but typically in situations like this, they do run consecutively. This is the same judge that recently heard the case of Orlando Bradford, the football player that we all know and love, who is serving some prison time for choking two girlfriends. And she actually gave him, he was facing 2 to 7.5, and he's doing 5 years. So she was a little towards the high end there. So we'll see what she wants to do with this one. The sentencing will certainly be interesting. She is definitely allowed to take into consideration what happened after the verdict was read.
Yeah. So official sentencing isn't until May 14th. Caitlin, is this kind of just you just wait until May 14th? How do you kind of keep track of anything? Is there anything that you can do on your end to update anything going on between now?
Yeah, what happens between now and May 14th?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, we have, he's still facing charges of stalking and disrupting an educational institution. This was from the same case, but the judge had severed the charges and said that the stalking had nothing to do with the assault. So the state could still pursue a second trial on those charges. I'm going to reach out to them and see what their plan is. I'm guessing that they'll probably wait till after the sentencing to make a decision. If he gets 23 years in prison, they might not see the need to try him on anything else because he's a 50-year-old man. We also have another case. He's accused of violating a restraining order against Julie Labonte, contacting her via Skype and Facebook months after the incident. So that, and that's totally separate case. She's a different victim, so they may pursue that regardless of what happens. And then we still have this civil suit. So there's a fair amount of follow-up to do. For this, as far as the civil suit is concerned, the state technically, now that Craig Carter has been convicted, they don't have to pay for his civil defense attorney anymore. They paid this guy over close to $1 million now. I think it's at $950,000.
Wow.
So we'll be reaching out to find out if they intend on stopping payment, essentially.
Yeah.
But what's the timeline like on the civil suit? Is that something that, I mean, you just kind of talked about it a little bit. Is that something that they kind of take into consideration, the sentencing of this trial? Is that something that kind of plays into that? Or is that just a completely separate trial that doesn't, that this one doesn't bear any weight on?
I think this will bear significant weight on it. The civil suit is against Craig Carter and the U of A, and it essentially says that the U of A knew what was going on and allowed Craig Carter to continue to do what he was doing. But the fact that he has now been found guilty of a crime will certainly play heavily into the civil suit. We had some attorneys representing the U of A in the courtroom watching proceedings this week. And there is actually a hearing, I think, in the middle of April for the civil suit, so we'll see what goes on. It's supposed to go to a jury trial, but of course anybody can make a settlement offer at any time if they want to.
A lot has been settled, but there's still a lot more to come.
It's far from over.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that should do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Caitlin, stellar work as always, working in the courtroom. You can follow her on Twitter at Caitlin C. Schmidt. For Dominic, I'm Justin. We'll see you next time. Don't forget to download the Wildcaster app, available on Google Play, Apple Store, and don't forget to subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next time.